Here we go. Part three, and attitudes of a Gentile, two Gentiles in an egalitarian world. So what does egalitarian mean? Egalitarian means that we're all kind of equal, that we're all brothers, we're all, whether Jew, non-Jew, whatever race, sex, whatever, we're all equal. We just all make our own choice, and hopefully we make the choices that are appropriate for us. So there is I came across over the preparing this, just not necessarily so much part of this year, but just a fascinating insight. I thought it would be a good place to start this year, and that is the Sforno in his introduction to Sefer Bereishis. We've done a few Sfornos in First Seder, so if one goes to the way beginning of the book, he's got a introduction where he makes the following comment in it. He says, "V'chein tziper ki besur tikvas teshuvas hamin ha'noshi b'chalo kasher choni lahashchis kol tikkun elokei pamim shalosh." That we tell these first stories, and Hashem's hope was, it talks about the beginning of Bereishis, and that there have been three times in the beginning of the Bereishis where God, so to speak, or attempted to destroy the world, right? That there's Adam, that Hashem had all his hope for Adam, and Adam messed up, so his world is destroyed. Then there is Noach, and the world is destroyed. And then there is the Migdal Bavel, where although the world wasn't destroyed, it was that civilization was then destroyed. And I've done that three times. He flee Hashem chasid lo mikol hamin ubarcha ba'avram v'zaro lahasig blam hataklis hamachon etzlo minishum adam alai eretz kasher hispayer. So because I went through those three experiences and it hasn't worked out, so I, instead of trying to achieve what I was attempting to achieve through the whole world, I chose one man who's going to be in charge of one nation, and they're going to do what I need to achieve, and then they'll go ahead and teach the rest of the world. The original plan, whatever the original plan means, whatever that, you know, in God's where God is above time, whatever that means, but the original plan was is that just civilization, there wouldn't be a Jewish people, there would just be a civilization that would achieve perfection. And when that didn't work out, Hashem had to take a step back and say, all right, that's too much. We're not going to be able to do the whole civilization at once. Let's take one person who will create one nation, and then they will go and influence the rest of the world. Then you have Avram and his son and his grandsons. And they would be responsible for filling the entire world with the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I thought that that's a good place to start, that you have there is Kedusha, there is a plan for everybody. And so how does that fit in with some of the things that we know? So there's many, many examples. As one goes through yeshiva, you just get used to some of these examples of that seem to be somewhat unfair treatment of non-Jews. And you kind of shrug, and you don't really know what to do with it, and we move on. So here is just one example of admittedly many examples. There is a Rambam here in Hilchos Shar Avos HaTumah, Perek Beis Halacha Yud, where he has the following, and it is a chiddush that we know that there is something called shechita, that the animal has to be slaughtered in an appropriate fashion. So can anybody do it? What if we have a machine that does it in that fashion? So the answer is no, it has to be done by a Jew. What about if a non-Jew does the Shechita? So that doesn't qualify as Shechita. However, says the Rambam, there's actually two different halachos that are solved when an animal is shechted. We're used to one of them. The one that we're used to is, if an animal is shechted appropriately, you're allowed to eat it, right? That's the way we Hilchos Shechita. There is an additional level that needs to be done, and that is when an animal is not shechted appropriately, it is called a nevela, and a nevela actually has tuma. It actually becomes tummy. It becomes impure. So the Rambam says that if a non-Jew does the Shechita, an appropriate halachic shechita, they just happen to not be Jewish, so on one, you're not allowed to eat the animal, but the animal does not become tamei. That's the claim that the Rambam makes. Okay, so that's an interesting halacha. Comes the Ravid. The Ravid is the constant companion on the side of the Rambam. He writes in the introduction, he attacks the Rambam's very first statement. So the Rambam says, this is the book that I think can solve all of our problems. All you're going to need is a Tanakh in my book, and you'll know everything you need to know. And right away, the Ravid says, that's impossible, it can't be, and he spends the rest of the Rambam proving that. So comes the Ravid and says, and that's the part that's underlined, Zuhi achas misfarosov ve'in bekulan pechusamizu. This is one of the Rambam's ideas, and there are none worse than this one. Right? Right? Ki ovdei kochavim heim kibehemos, because non-Jews are like animals. Ve'ein mitamin ve'ein mitma'in. And they aren't tam, they don't become tamay, and they don't cause tuma. Im ha'am ha'doma l'chamor. They are a nation similar to a donkey. Hein goyim kamar kamar midali. That they are... But I even wrote it here. They're used to mop up and they get dropped in buckets. And they're considered like the wind, and anybody who thinks that they're anything is just like it's like wind in the it's like a handful of wind. So trying to grab wind. Okay, so that's a pretty harsh statement that the Ravid is making. And, you know, on one hand we say, well, look, he's really trying to go after the Rambam here. That's part of it. And, whoa, that's a pretty intense thing for him to say.
So, and he's pushing back on what the Rambam said.
Right, well, he's making a halakhic argument against the Rambam. But by doing so, he makes a statement about non-Jews that would make us, in the year 2016 now, that would make us shudder. What? That's pretty harsh. And he's not pulling these comparisons out of nowhere. The Gemara talks about the non-Jews are compared to donkeys, and having relations with one is like having with an animal. That they are somehow have not achieved the full human status. So how does one? So that is one level of difficulty. Right? That's one level of how do we understand that in today's world. Another topic, so some may recall this was before I was I came here, but in the year 2007 there was someone named Noah Feldman. Anybody remember this incident? So Noah Feldman was a he's a professor in Harvard Law School. He's a pretty prestigious, he's a writer. He if you Google his name, a lot of different articles will show up. So he went to Maimonides when he was younger. He's no longer religious, and in fact he married a non-Jewish woman. And when he was invited to his reunion of Maimonides High School, I think I got the story right, they had a picture of him, and they left cropped his wife out. So he was not too thrilled about this, and he went on to write a pretty scathing article in the New York Times about modern Orthodox, like, it's almost like you think the Haredim are the crazy ones. No, the modern Orthodox are just as crazy. And he goes and lists some of the challenges that he had, that he is still clearly challenged by. So over the course of that article, he raised the issue that there's one time a doctor came and addressed the class, and he talked about the idea that saving a life trumps Shabbos. So he explained that in its purest form, that only would apply to a Jew, which is true. That that technically, the idea that one would be docha the Shabbos would violate the Shabbos in order to save a life, it should only apply to a Jewish life. But if everybody finds out about that, or if we would leave a non-Jew to die, so that would lead to Eva. That would lead to all sorts of problems, and we can't go ahead and have that type of situation. So there's two ways, and this is what he talks about in the article, there's two ways to look at that. There's one way to look at that really we shouldn't be saving them, but what can we do? We have to, otherwise we're in trouble. Or the second one is, look how, I don't know, flexible is the right term, but look how we're able to use halacha that we don't just save Jews, we save non-Jews, and we save everybody, right? Which is a nice way of looking at it. So Noah Feldman sort of cynically says, ha, the doctor kind of chose the second way, of course, and he said he was very proud of that. And then he talks about how his Rebbe challenged him and said, no, you have to have in mind different, etc. But he had that line at the end of the second line, the end of the second paragraph that I put on the list, the sheet here, the physician's quite reasonable opted for the latter explanation, and he added that he himself would never distinguish Jewish from a non-Jewish patient. A human being was a human being. Okay, so that is a sentiment, and the truth is, I have no idea who the doctor was, but the truth is, I think many doctors would have that sentiment, and many Orthodox people in general would have that sentiment. Well, I can't do it. In fact, in the article that I, many of these sources come from one of the articles I put on the end of the source sheet for further reading. So all of them are available online. You just put that title into Google, and you'll easily find the article available. So Dr. David Berger talks about that. He talks to many Jews, and this is like the one thing that people, like, they tell him, I don't care what the rabbi, I don't care what the Torah says, I'm doing this. Like, I'm not going to treat a Jew in a non-Jewish life any differently. So that's So that's issue number two. Okay, and then there's these random smattering of halachos that we come across that, what do you do with them? So source number four is a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Savar of Yosef Lemeimer, Hadatanya. Ha'ovdi kochavim v'roi behema. So ovdi kochavim are what they sound like, those that worship Avodah Zarah. Roi behema, what are those? Those are shepherds of, behema daka, shepherds of small animals. So apparently, these show up a few times over the course of the Talmud as not being the biggest tzaddikim, right? These roi behema dakos. They're known that they probably steal and they're probably sitting around drinking or whatever. They're not known to be the greatest fellows. So lo malin velo moridin. So what do we say about them? Lo malin velo moridin. What does that mean? That we are not going to raise them from the pit if they fall in, but we will not push them in the first place. Now, we won't actively kill them. We won't go out of our way in order to save them. Okay, so the Gemara says, Asuke b'schar shari mishum eva. Now, if they pay you, so then you could do it, because otherwise it will lead to eva, which is this, we talked about this last week or the week before. Sakanas nefasho says a guy is raising their dagger about to kill you. Eva is, we're afraid that they're going to go home and get their dagger, then come back to kill you. Right? So we're concerned about something that might happen in the future, so you'd be allowed to save them under that circumstance. So Amalei Abaye, why? Why? Yachal lomar lo kai beria igra. You could tell him, oh, I would save you, but I can't. My son is on the roof, and although I better go get him, sorry. And you could go and save your son. Or you could say, inami, nikita le zimna leve doar. You could say, oh, look at that. I've been called to the Beidoar, and nowadays is known as the post office, like in Israel, right? But it's the government office. So you could say, oh, look at that. I have jury duty. Sorry. Gotta go. Right? And so you have a built-in excuse. So Abai seems to be saying, even if the guy offers to pay you, you don't really have a leniency, because you could find an excuse about why you can't save him. So that, again, okay. That's pretty harsh. And then we move along as well to another halakha. Oh, let's go to number 7. I see I don't have a number 6. Okay, let's go to number 7. Number 7. So number 7 is comes up when I think we mentioned this in the past, in the last couple of weeks also, when I taught in Torah Academy, I taught 6th grade girls for a few years, taught them halakha. And Sarah, I did not teach. I did not have the pleasure of teaching this to Sarah. But we learned how close the Shabbos Aved, the returning lost things. And one of the halachas in the Shabbos Aved is you were required to return lost items to a Jew and not to a non-Jew. So that every year the girls, what? I can't believe I can't accept that, etc. Okay, so that is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. And what is the part of the issue with we learned the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which doesn't have everything? So here he adds in a little bit more, but it's still, we'll see what it says. Avos avedas ha'obei kochavim uteres. The lost object of a non-Jew is permitted. You're allowed to take it. Shneimar avedas achicha. Because it says you have to return the aveda, the lost object of your brother. So if they are not your brother, meaning they're not Jewish, so you're not required to return it. So truth is, that's not so difficult to accept. I mean, Hashavas Aveda is not an automatic moral action that you're immoral if you don't return. Returning a lost object means the person is gone. Right? They don't know. They have no idea how they're going to find it, and you have an obligation to go and track them down. So I don't know. I actually found in Google. I came across an article from Rabbi Broid on a comparison in halacha of returning lost objects between Jews and between Jewish law and secular law. So you can all find that online and see what he has to say there about what is actually required under secular law. But I would doubt that it goes as far as halacha requires. So that is something that we do for our brothers, for Jews. We don't necessarily have to extend it outwards. However, he then goes on and says, "V'hamachzira hareza over avera," and he who does return it is in violation of a law. Okay. Why? Because you machzik yedei over avera. Why? Because you have strengthened the hands of those that violate the law. V'im hichzira l'kadish es Hashem kidei sheiv paru es Yisrael v'yedu shehem ba'alei amuna. But if you return it in order to be makadish shem shemayim and so that people will realize that the Jews are trustworthy people, so then that's good. Hareza meshuvach. Uvamakum sheish chil Hashem avidasu asura v'chayv l'achzira. In a place where there would otherwise be a desecration of God's name, so then it would be prohibited to keep and you would have to return it. So the strict law, you don't have to do it, but we're concerned about how it will look. Okay? So those are a set of halachos. So this happened last week. Chava gave me a shopping list. Was last week, she had to work Wednesday and Thursday. So that means that. So I went and did the shopping. I take my son, Yosef. And as we're on the list, not just the list, I tried out the new app for all the husbands here. Out of milk app. Maybe you could have a list that you share back and forth. So anyways, we're going, we're filling up the cart, and I had gotten Yosef to actually sit in the cart, which is quite a feat. I had to bribe him a little bit with a bagel, but it was good, okay? And half a bagel, I had the other half, you know, to make sure to pay for it later. And as we get to the cream cheese, he gives one of his and he wants to hold it. And we put it in the cup holder. So then we keep on going. We got a significant amount of stuff. This was a Thursday shopping trip. And I, you know, we line up and, you know, we pay for everything. And then we get to the car. And as I'm loading for the car, all of a sudden Yosef pulls out from under his seat, he pulls out the cream cheese. Like with a, yeah. So Chava, since it's my fault, I have to clarify that I don't blame him, I blame me. So now I'm in the middle of the parking lot with a unpaid carton of cream cheese. Right? So that's the salacha. Right? So do I have to go and bring it back in? So I figure, yeah, alright, so I go and bring it back in. And then I'm looking around and like the lines are long and etc. And I'm like, oh man, I don't even get the Kiddush Hashem. I don't even get this idea of. Then I realize, wait a second, if I try to leave now, then I get the Chil Hashem, right? So I better go and pay for it someplace. So I went and paid for the cream cheese and moved on from there. So this halacha right comes up on a regular basis. Okay, so this perhaps bothers us a little bit. So the first question that I just want to address, and we spoke about this, I think, 5 years ago, Shabbos HaGadol Drasha was on this topic about the immoral, quote-unquote, immoral halachos, how do we deal with them? And he quoted from an article that Rabbi Norman Lamb wrote, that he, we're just talking about the question of, is one allowed to ask this question? Is that an appropriate question to ask? Well, it doesn't sound right to me. Well, that's because you don't. What are you coming from? Where are you? If your morality doesn't line up with the Torah's halakos, so then maybe there's something wrong with your morality. What gives you the right to say, well, that doesn't sound right to me? So make it sound right to you. What is this? Where does this come from? Rabbi Lamb talks about this in the context of the obligation of B'nai Yisrael going into the land of Israel, destroying all the nations, and destroying Amalek, and many of those halachos also sound somewhat difficult. So, when is one permitted to ask the question? So he writes, our goal must be the attainment of moral propriety, in the name of which we seek to revise the form of halachic ruling, which is itself derived from halachic principles or clear Jewish teachings. Right? It is based on, if the question is, well, I heard that there's the latest fad out there, and how does halacha not fit with that? So that perhaps is not an appropriate question. The time when one is permitted to ask the question is when the question is coming from a halachic place. So it's appropriate to ask, how could Hashem command us to kill Amalek when we have a commandment not to kill? It is a Jewish value not to kill. So all of a sudden now we forget that value. So we're not just asking, oh, that doesn't fit with me. That doesn't fit with a different Torah value. It is a stira. It's a contradiction. How do I resolve that? So that is a permitted question to ask. So he goes on and talks about the idea of the question about slavery. I mean, that slavery is something that has, slavery is something in the Torah. There is some interest. Rabbi Przanski has been giving shirim on a Monday night entitled "The Presidents and the Jews." So he did one of them was pre-Civil War, what the different Jewish approaches were to slavery, which of course depended heavily on whether you were in the North or whether you were in the South. But different rabbis gave different approaches to whether it was appropriate or inappropriate, just like the Christians were doing. And people in the North said that it's terrible and inhumane, and people in the South are saying, "What do you mean? There's a whole parsha in the Torah about it." So there's chapters in Masechtas and Gemara about having slaves. So what's your problem with having slaves? So he talks about going about how slavery is something that went down over time. But then he adds in the last paragraph. For instance, in the case of slavery, the opposing principle is ki avadai heim, that all humans are servants of the Creator. So it's not just that, slavery doesn't fit with the social morals of the mid-1800s. It's that slavery seems to go against another verse in the Torah. So how do I resolve that contradiction? So that's when these questions are permitted to be asked. So is there a Torah value to impose it to that Jews and non-Jews, that there is an egalitarian idea that everybody has sanctity and everybody needs to be cared for and we shouldn't be mistreating people? So I think so. There is an idea called Kavod Habrios. There is of honoring all those that are created. There is an idea of that Hashem created all of humanity, B'Tzelem Elokim, that such an idea exists. So I think it's reasonable to then ask the question of, okay, so then why does the Torah seem to have this discrepancy about ways that one treats Jews and one ways that teaches non-Jews, treats non-Jews? So Dr. Berger, in his article, talks about when he was in about 20 years old, he was in the shir of Avraham Soloveitchik. And Rav Aaron used to give some hashkafa shkuzin as well, and he pointed to this idea of returning lost things to non-Jews. So he pointed to a Yerushalmi. There's a Yerushalmi that actually gives, looked up the Yerushalmi, there's apparently three or four stories in a row of cases where Jews found things that non-Jews lost, and the Jew returned it, and then there was a resulting Kiddush Hashem. There was a sanctification of Hashem's name because that object was returned. So there's a couple stories in a row. But the most interesting line in that probably comes from Shimon ben Shetach. So Shimon ben Shetach was one of the very, very early Tanaim. Shimon ben Shetach is pre-Christianity, right? He's the Beis HaMikdash is still standing. If there is Christianity, it's not the organized religion that it is today. And he taught, and there's a story here how he wasn't able to make much money, and his Talmidim said, let's buy him a donkey, and when we buy him a donkey, we'll be able to make some more money, and he'll be able to earn a living, and they buy the donkey, and the donkey has this pearl attached to its leg. So they're all excited. You've heard the story. You're nodding. So they're all excited. Oh, wonderful. Not only will Shimon ben Shetach be able to earn a better living, he won't even have to earn a living at all. But so they'll be able to sell the pearl and be able to live off of that. So they go to Shimon ben Shetach and say, great news, we found this pearl. And it was attached to the donkey that we bought you. So he said, so tell me, when you bought the donkey, did the non-Jew that you bought it from, did he know that the pearl was attached to it? They said, no. He says, well, you can't keep it then. And they said, why not? It's a lost thing. We're not obligated to return to the non-Jew. Not only that, he won't even know about it. So Shimon ben Shetach responds, Ma'asun savrin Shimon ben Shetach barbarin hava? What do you think? Shimon ben Shetach is a barbarian? Wait a second. Meaning I'm not going to return it? Of course I'm going to return it. How can I not return it? So that seems to be a reaction, and it goes on to have an example of a Kiddush Hashem, it's a sanctification of God's name as well, but it's a very interesting line. It's a, we mean that that's immoral for me to keep it. How could I just go ahead and keep it? So there are. There's a lot of stories along these lines. There is a famous story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, that when he, someone posted on the RCA listserv his story, added a little bit to it, that they were learning actually these halachos about distinctions between Jews and non-Jews, and that there is a difference. Actually, this halacha that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, when this fellow was learning Bichav Rusa, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, this halacha about that you don't have to help the non-Jew out of the pit. They learned the Gemara, and Rav Yaakov says, that reminds me of a story. When I was the Rav in Siftavian, he's the Rav of the town in Europe that he was the rabbi in, he said there was this terrible anti-Semitic postal worker or something that he always used to give the Jews a little bit more change than they deserved. And Rav Yaakov got up and he said, I remember I got up in the shul and I announced that I know he's giving you more change. The reason he's doing it is because he's testing all of us. And don't take the bait, make sure you give it all back and make sure that we deal with him fairly. And he ended up saving a lot of the Jews in the town. That's the way that the story goes. So that adds a little bit to this idea. Well, there seems to be, and it's not just, oh, can I get around it? It seems to be that there's a moral imperative to try to make these returns. Meaning, if it's just a apologetics, like, oh, well, it's a Kiddush Hashem, you could go and give it back. Well, he wouldn't say that I'm morally deficient if I don't do it. Right? He wouldn't use the barbarian line. He would just say, well, I want to go and make a Kiddush Hashem. The fact that he said, I think I'm this immoral person, right, means that he thinks that there is a morality that is actually forcing him to return. So what is the source of that morality? The truth is, we've raised about four or five questions. This approach is only going to answer the Christian aspect of it. Truth is, it does not resolve the Shabbos issue. The Shabbos issue is still going to stand as the Shabbos question. This issue with Shimon ben Shetach, it's unclear who this fellow was that he was dealing with. So it's unclear whether this will resolve that answer as well. But at least with resolving our approach today to how do we deal with our neighbors about these laws that seem to have inequality to them, right? So perhaps this is an approach that can work. So one approach that Dr. Berger suggests, which we'll just bring it up and say why it doesn't totally solve the problem, is that there's something called the Ger Toshav. That there is something that even though that we're required to, when we're on the second page, I know there's a front and a back that are the same, and then there is a second page. The second page... Yeah, second page looks like this. All right. In other words, it doesn't have a title on it, and it doesn't look like the first page. So. Okay, so source number 9 is, I just went to the Encyclopedia Talmudit.
This doesn't look like this.
Right, that's because I added in that source later, and but I had already written my notes on this one, so. Ready to go. So the Encyclopedia Talmud, this goes through, they're only up to, I think, Chaf or Lamed now. They go through the Talmud topic by topic by topic, rather than Talmud is all spread out, so it just spells out topic. Gives you a title, and this is all you need to know. Well, but not all, it's never all. But, you know, so under the title of Ger Toshav, so it tells you the following. Ger Toshav, mitzvah alin l'hachayosa. We have a mitzvah to keep him alive. Keshem shemitzuv makol echad mibnei Yisrael. Just as we're commanded to keep alive all of Bnei Yisrael. Again, who is a Ger Toshav? Ger Toshav is somebody who signed on to keeping the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach, the seven Noachide laws, and therefore we don't have to banish them from the land of Israel. They're allowed to stay in Israel as a result. So they've kind of signed, it's like kind of what some of the right-wing parties in Israel want to get done today. Right, they'll sign allegiance to the state, and that we're going to maintain the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and they're allowed to stay. And they achieve some sort of status. What is this status? So the Ger Toshav status is, Kishem Shemitzuvim Al Kol Echam Mimnei Yisrael, Mitzvah Aleinu L'Achayosa, we would maintain, keep them alive, like we're commanded with all the rest of the Jews. Shemaya Nitpa Benar, Onafa Lav Hagal, Shenitrach B'chol Kochin B'Hatzalaso. That if they are drowning in the river, or the pile of stones fall on top of them, we will try as hard as we can to save them. And if they are sick, we'll try to cure them. That you're going to have your brother with you, and they'll strengthen them, and the Ger V'Toshav will live amongst you. So we see from what? That there is a mitzvah to keep them alive, even though they are not technically Jewish. So here you go. You have a makor of non-Jews that seem to be pretty good people that rather than giving them the non-Jew treatment, we're giving them the quasi-Jewish treatment. They don't achieve all of the privileges of being Jewish, but they achieve some of the privileges of being Jewish. Right? So that would be very nice if we could apply that to non-Jews today. There are two problems with that. What are the two problems to that? So number one is becoming a Ger Toshav requires a declaration. So we're not necessarily going around and getting declarations from everybody. That's not very practical, nor is it something that can really be done because of the second reason. And what is the second reason? The second reason is one of the seven Noahide laws are that you are not allowed to violate Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to worship idols. or foreign gods. And guess what? We assume, although this is part of the first year, and we'll see how much of this, but we assume, at least for our purposes, that Avodah Zarah is, that Christianity is Avodah Zarah. Christianity in its raw form, in the Roman Catholic Christianity and other sects as well, are categorized as Avodah Zarah. So that being the case, it's a little hard to apply the Ger Toshav standard to all these people. Okay, but all hope is not lost, Shelley. We will find a way. What is that way? So to do that, and this is the approach that Dr. Berger takes, we will take one more halacha that seems to be totally unfair and unjust, and how could this possibly be, and we'll see what one commentator says about that halacha. Says the Mishnah, Shur shel Yisrael shenogach l'shur shel Kanani. If a shur of a Jew, a Jewish ox, it's got ox payas and shenogach l'shur shel Kanani, and it gores a shur of a Kanani, one of the seven nations, who we assume were not such wonderful people, putter. Right? The Jew is exempt. The Jew doesn't have to pay when the Jewish ox kills, gores the non-Jewish ox. You know, the tattoos and the nose ring and, okay. V'shel kanani shenagach l'shur shel Yisrael. But when the non-Jewish ox, gores the Jewish ox, bein tam bein muad, m'shalim nezek shalim. Whether a tam or a muad, a tam and muad are Baba Kama terms, whether a ox that has never gored before, in which case they only have to pay what's called chatzi nezek, they only have to pay half of the damage, or a muad means they are constantly doing it, they've done it already three times, therefore they would have to pay full damage. If it's a non-Jewish ox, they are automatically considered a muad and have to pay full damage. So a Jewish ox gores the non-Jewish ox, exemption, non-Jewish ox, he pulls out his, what's the card, the police, he pulls out the Fraternal Order of Police card, and he's exempt. But the other way, if the ox that belongs to the non-Jew attacks the Jewish ox, no matter what, they're going to have to pay for all of the damages. Right? So this, we'll put this on the list of, gosh, that sounds like very difficult to deal with, Bizman Hazeh. So the Gemara actually asks that question. The Gemara says, how, really? That doesn't sound so fair. So I'm a Rabbi Abahu, I'm a Kra. Well, it's based on a pasuk, and mod v'yimodeid aretz ra'av yeser gayim. That there is a pasuk that Hashem came and judged the land, and He saw that the non-Jews were released. What does it mean the non-Jews were released? What is that talking about? That's a verse. So ra'a sheva mitzu shekiblu aleim b'nei Noah. So He saw the seven laws that the non-Jew, that the Noahides had accepted upon themselves. Kivan shelo kaimo amud v'hitir mamon liYisrael. Once they weren't fulfilling the seven Noahide laws, so then Hashem sort of made their money free. Kind of let, made their money hefker. What the,
ownerless.
Released their money. Made their money ownerless. Because they weren't, so to speak, because they weren't keeping their end of the deal, they weren't keeping the seven Noahide laws, so therefore we're going to make them suffer, and they're going to have to pay under these circumstances. Okay, that's very interesting. Comes the Beis HaBechira, comes the Me'iri. And remember the Me'iri, we go back to 2 weeks ago, we talked about the Me'iri. So the Me'iri had constantly throughout Shas picks up on these issues and has a shita of, well, that doesn't apply today in modern day Provence. Right? We learned several times about this man. Here is, he comes in once again and has the same type of line, and he spells something out very clearly. He says, that who are this talking about? This is talking about nations that are not bound by laws and religion. Kosha Amar Aleim B'Gemara, as the Gemara describes, Ra Sheva Mitzvah Shekiblu Aleim B'nei Noach Shelo Kimum Amad V'Hitim Amunim. That he saw the nations that weren't keeping the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, the seven Noachide laws, and with them we freed their money. Kol Shash Hadin Mechayvin B'Kach. At the time when the law required this, Hakol shesheva mitzvos biyadam, dinam etzleinu kedineinu etzlam. But if they are keeping the sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach, so our laws are like their laws. We would actually treat them equally. They nosin panim b'din liatzmenu, and we would not show favor in the din to ourselves. Umeata in tzarech lomar, and certainly in tzarech lomar is a language of kal v'chomer. Shekin beumos hagedoros bedarki datos v'nimusim, and certainly nations that have just laws and religions. So, what is an Iri coming and saying here? That these many of these halachos, the ovdei avodah zarah, the ways that we're punishing one who worships avodah zarah, is talking about pagans, talking about people that did not have an organized religion, and B, did not have an organized life, did not have an organized law, did not have an organized society. So it comes to me and says, yeah, in that context, so many of these halachos apply. These people are difficult to deal with. If they're going to attack us, they're going to be constantly stealing from us. So yeah, so halacha does give us some dispensations in those situations. However, if you're living in a just and orderly society, and they are maintaining a just and orderly life, so then these I don't know if I want to call them dispensation, these requirements are not going to apply, because we will then treat them as equals. Now, Dr. Berger spends a significant amount of time in his article talking about, did the Miri actually hold Christianity as a avodah zarah or not? So that's an interesting, right? So he actually says, I always wanted to believe that that really the Meiri held it was a avodah zarah, but just for whatever reason held it was a avodah zarah light. The line that I have here on the page here from his article, this is right. My own view is that Christianity, the bottom line there, is non-pagan avodah zarah in a monotheistic mode. And I used to attribute this view to the Meiri, a non-pagan avodah zarah in a monotheistic mode. So what does he mean by that? Because in a polytheistic religion, so does a Greek person feel bound by the morals of the Greek gods? Well, I hope not, because they're pretty immoral. Right? So if the gods themselves are not preaching morality, so then the people are not going to be being moral. But if in case where the god that they believe in, the deity, preaches, so to speak, a moral way of living, so then we can deal with them in terms of morals. So Berger goes back and forth, suggests he kind of concludes that he thinks that Meiri really believed that Christianity was absolutely not a avodah zarah. And he says, I hope to be proven wrong, but that's kind of the way that I feel right now, is that it's not a avodah zarah. So if that being the case, then you have a bit of a problem, because although people might be willing to accept the Meiri to some extent, nobody else holds that Christianity is not a avodah zarah. So, what's the issue there? So, that Dr. Berger adds is that you don't necessarily have to accept the entire Meiri. The Meiri is saying that, well, because they are bound by laws and bound by their religion, so therefore we would treat them as equal, bound by the laws and bound by their religion, in order to achieve a morality, so therefore we won't mistreat them anymore. Well, what if they're not bound by their religion, but rather bound by their laws, right? What if it's not their religion it's not necessarily their religion that is allowing us to treat them equally. Rather, it's the fact that they are moral people that allows us to treat them morally, treat them equally. So that possibility certainly exists. That possibility exists. So that possibility is suggested in the B'nai Banim. B'nai Banim is Rav Henkin. Forgetting the first name now. Rav Henkin is the father of the Rabbi Henkin that was murdered. So his father is the Shalos HaTshuvos B'nai Banim. So he talks about, as a long tshuva, he talks about this Meiri. On the bottom right there, he talks about the Meiri a little bit, and then I cut off the bottom of the page. And then on the left, where I have it underlined, he says, V'hi svara gdola l'chalik bin hanitzros l'shar avodah zarah. It makes sense to distinguish between Christianity and other avodah zarah, meaning paganism. That afal pisha b'vadai ha'ishtach avel l'tzelem shel yeshu. That even though certainly bowing down to an idol of Yeshu, a crucifix, right? He avodah zarah. We'd say that is avodah zarah. Gam ledas ha-Meiri, even according to the Meiri. Now David Berger quotes that and says, "Oh, when I read that, I was so happy, but I realized I wasn't convinced." Right? V'shelo kimi shetab kavanaso, and not like somebody who made a mistake in their desire. But meaning what? That we could treat it differently because it gives a moral perspective. So that is that's helpful. Meaning whenever, so most of these halachos that seem to go, that's talking about pagans, and we're not necessarily discussing pagans. So here he has his summary that he actually begins his article with. He says, let me begin by devoting a single paragraph to a summary of these views. Contemporary Muslims and even Christians are not idolaters. Meaning they're not idolaters. Not that we don't recognize the act as idolatry, but they don't qualify as idolaters. In dealing with them, we not be concerned with laws that are grounded in fear of facilitating idolatry, so that we may do business with Christians on their holidays and even sell them items that might be used for the houses of worship. As to discrimination in civil and criminal law, distinctions between Jews and adherents of Christianity and Islam are virtually wiped out. Virtually, there are still going to be some halakhas you got to work out, but virtually wiped out. The reason for this is that these distinctions were intended to apply to pagans who behaved in an uncivilized fashion. But worshippers of one cosmic deity, even if they affirm some erroneous conceptions about him, are impelled by their faith to establish moral societies. So because they are impelled by faith to establish moral societies, these halakhas won't apply. So a couple of more notes to add in. Dr. Berger raises, well, what if they're atheists? What if it's a secular society? Right? So he says, well, it'd be kind of odd that we would have to encourage people to do avodah zarah in order to give them these dispensations. Right? That sounds a little awkward. I mean, as long, they're charged. So nowadays, why are people charged with being moral in a normal circumstance in America? Why do atheists feel you have to be moral? Well, there's a social contract. There's some kind of reason why we have to do it. They're bound by the law or bound by morality. So, okay, that seems like it's enough. You don't necessarily need to do it because there's, you know, because Jesus said to do it, right? You have to do it because we feel morally impelled to do it. That should be enough to make these lines even. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in Logic of the Heart, Logic of Mind. So Logic, he has a book on the Rambam that's here. Some of those are shortened essays or changed essays into English in the separate book, Logic of Heart, Logic of Mind. So he makes the point on the right side here that there's two different terms that we use. There's avas habrios versus avas Yisrael. That we have on one hand idea of avas habrios, which is the love of all creations, of all people, and then there is a avas Yisrael, a love of all Jews. So the distinction is avas habrios is something in the mind, something that is psychological, and it is kind of ideal that we have a love for all people. Says, however, that's not necessarily that's not blind. What's blind is avas Yisrael. Avas Yisrael is something that we are incumbent upon us to love every Jew. But in terms of loving all humanity, well, that depends if they're behaving or not. Right? If they are behaving, if they're keeping up, they're keeping the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, they're being moral, ethical people. So then we'll love them. We'll get along. We'll do fine. It's when they're not, so then that we won't accept it. So Dr. Regan, his article then lays out that there is, you know, with Shuva of the Bnei Banim, and then there is also Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg also writes that he thinks that we paskin like the Meiri, we wouldn't have to qualify for this distinction. Then Rav Hirsch has a line, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik paskins this way. So he gives a nice list of people that actually paskin this way. So then he raises one question at the very end of his article and says, So now we feel good. We came to Rabbi Gross's shir, and now we have a good hesver on how to go about with all these halachos. So what do we do about everyone else? I mean, you know, until I read these articles the last couple of weeks, I was still like struggling with this. And how do we deal with this? So why was this only thought of in the last couple of decades? So perhaps the answer is that, well, we weren't necessarily treated so well until recently. That this question of, should I be looking at my neighbor and really be and if they fall into the sewer, I shouldn't really be saving them? So that question wasn't really a relevant question until recently, when we actually became neighbors and actually became friends and actually started getting along with our neighbors, which we would assume would be a good thing. Until not the long recent past, not until not so long ago, that kind of question, it wouldn't be an issue. As he describes, I have a lot a different approach to a Holocaust survivor that uses a derogatory term to refer to non-Jews as I would to somebody in their 40s and 50s that would use a derogatory term to refer to non-Jews. It's just a different approach. Somebody who was beat up, and most people growing up in Europe in pre-1940, at some point in their life, were beat up by non-Jews, literally. Not even talking about the Holocaust. That was a fact of life. So it's a little understandable why these halachos would give solace, and okay, there's a distinction. We clearly see why there's a distinction. We're normal, and they're not. But in the more in the society that we live in today, so perhaps the approach of the Meiri could come more into the fore, that perhaps not the halachic approach of that it's not Avodah Zarah. I mean, we make that point as well, that this should not become a kula in Avodah Zarah. Oh, so now we can go in churches, now it's not so concerning. Right, the matter of faith is still problematic to us, but the moral force that comes from it is something that is very positive, something that we embrace, and perhaps would therefore cause not a halachic change, but a different adaption of how these halachos should be used and viewed in the current environment in which we live. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for coming.